What is not included on a BSC that I highly encourage people to do is check for libido of those both. So the desire for breeding cows. On a presentation, and me and my advisors, both my master's and PhD, we use that picture all the time, all around. And he has these two Charolais bulls. Both just passed the breeding sounds exam. They keep this bull around because of that. That bull has zero libido. So they both pass the breeding sounds exam. They put it with a cow, and that bull go and lay down in front of the cow while the other bull go in and breed the cow. Yes, he needs to pass, but also needs to go breed cows, otherwise you're not going to get any calves. So when you turn out your bulls out, the best way is watch that bull. Not necessarily every day, but a few days, go check and make sure that bull is interested in going there and doing its job.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost digestive health, performance, and profitability with Digesterone Prime, a feed additive that enhances digestion and immune function in beef calves. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Control the cortisol surge and control your drug costs on your inbound cattle. Make the 21-day SHOT Show a thing of the past with QFA 2000. Boehringer Ingelheim puts cattle first with innovative health solutions, vaccines, and care for your herd. Visit bianimalhealth.com/cattle.
High-producing cows need safe, healthy environments. Healthy environments starts with Jones Hamilton.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast, brought to you by Wisenetics. I am your host, Brandi Buzzard, and it's my pleasure to bring you the latest trends and issues from the best and brightest minds in the beef industry. Today, we are joined by Dr. Sal Ozaka, assistant professor and assistant beef cattle specialist at the University of Tennessee in the Department of Animal Science. Dr. Ozaka earned his Doctor of Veterinary Medicine from Sao Paulo State University, his Master's in Animal Science from the University of Idaho, and his PhD from South Dakota State University. Dr. Ozaka specializes in beef cattle reproduction, bull fertility, and heifer development, providing research-based education to producers. All those things with to do with reproductive management and bull fertility are very relevant right now. So we're going to have a really interesting discussion today and jump right in. So with that, welcome to the podcast, Dr. Ozaka. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you for this nice introduction, Brandi. Very nice to be here. It's my pleasure. I was very happy with the invite and invitation that you guys had for me to join you. I've seen several episodes. And several of my peers and friends have joined, so I'm very happy to be here.
Oh, well, thank you for watching and being an avid listener and subscriber. We do appreciate that very much so. To start off with, if you would just bring us up to speed on your background, how you got started in the beef industry, your career, you've had several different stops. So if you would just kind of bring us up to speed on that and help us get acquainted with you.
Absolutely. So I'm originally from Brazil. As you guys probably know, large cattle country there. However, I did not grow up in the cattle industry. I did have several friends around us that had beef cattle, and I was able to go to their operations and have a little bit, but it was actually at vet school in Brazil when I started having a closer contact. And through my advisor in Brazil, Dr. Vasconcelos, over as several people know him, Zaquinha. That's who actually put me and got me a lot of experience, allowing me to go to several internships on very large operations in Brazil. I mean, the first internship I did through Zaquinha, I went to about a 60,000 head operation. They had a 15,000 static feedlot operation and a cow-calf operation. So they're a very, very large group. So that's kind of how I really got started. And they're in vet school. When I started vet school, I want to go to large animal clinic. And then very quickly, I found the reproduction and beef cattle reproduction side there. And then I joined the group that Dr. Vasconcelos heads. And then it was amazing. And that literally sparked my interest with the beef industry. And then, you know, once you get into it, you know, in this industry, it's hard to not get passionate about it.
Boehringer Ingelheim puts cattle first
They deliver cutting-edge vaccines, parasiticides, and supplements to help keep cattle healthy and productive. From supporting fresh cows with Bovical calcium boluses to protecting your herd with pyramid vaccines, Beringer stands with veterinarians and producers every step of the way. Put cattle first on your operation. Learn more at bianimalhealth.com/cattle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Once you get involved, you feel like very much there and hooked on it for sure. In your bio that we talked about, you focus a lot of research on beef cattle production, full fertility, providing education to producers. So let's kind of focus on that today for a little bit. I guess maybe the first basis question just to start us off with is how should producers or how do we evaluate bull fertility? Just as a solid foundation for the episode, how do we evaluate bull fertility?
Absolutely. And you know, as a beef producer, most of them have been around and have done it. The breeding sounds exam is the cornerstone or the stepstone of the bull fertility. You know, one thing that people sometimes forget about the breeding sounds exam is it's not forever. And it's not because a bull passed today. It is good for life. So that breeding sounds exam is something that we really need to do every time before each breeding season, before every time we're going to turn that bull out with our cows. And if you think about cattle market today, that the last thing you want is a subfertile or infertile bull going in with your cows and completely losing a calf crop, right? And even if it means you gain one or two calves right now per bull, that's a huge source of revenue, right? If you think about two calves, what they bring in the market right now. So that breeding sounds exam, we'll compose of it's basically three parts of it. And sometimes people forget about, especially the first part. Most people remember the squirrel circumference portion and then looking at the semen quality. But the first step is looking at physical sounds of that bull. Things that people sometimes, overlook is, well, for a bull to see cows in heat or to detect cows in heat, he actually used sight. So if you're going to look at those cows in what we call sexually active groups or SAGs. So there's a bunch of cows mounting each other and a bull see it. So it's important to make sure the bull has good sight.
I had never thought of that.
Then making sure bull, you know, overall soundness, feet and leg is another extremely important portion there. You know, I joke with my producers when I'm talking here, with being an extension specialist, I'm directly in contact with a lot of our producers through several of our county meetings. And I talk with them, you know, you got a bull that has a leg issue. He may go there and breed the first and the second cow, but then he gets a little sore. What he's going to do, he's going to go find a shade and lay down until that pain goes away. And it goes maybe mount another cow, but then the pain gets worse and worse. And she was like, I'm not going to do this anymore because it hurts every time I do it, right? So he ended up getting worse. And then with that, depending on what it is that's causing that pain, the hormone that's being released can also impact the semen quality of that bull. And it's an interesting thing is the semen quality is also two-part test. The first one is what we look for, the motility. And it's like how many of those soldiers in there are actually marching forward, right? There is plenty of them in there, but what matters is those that are going forward. But that is a very, very low bar for us to cross. It's only 30% of them that needs to be moving forward. So, I'm in charge of our bull development program here at University of Tennessee. And for the past 5 years, probably almost 300 bulls might have gone through here. I saw one fail for motility.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that is usually not why they fail. They fail because of the morphology. And the morphology is how the shape of that spur. And there is a normal shape. So anything that diverge from that normal shape, that normal round head with the normal tail, is a problem. And then there's different consequences of the different problems. I don't think we need to get into too much detail of this, but basically the major ones would be something related to the head of that sperm. Mm-hmm. And think about this, the DNA is packed inside that head. Usually if they have issues with the shape of that head, it also will impact the DNA. So that DNA will be delivered to the egg to form the embryo. So mm-hmm. if that bad-shaped sperm is to fertilize, there is small chances or no chances that that embryo will actually develop to become a calf. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of part of why we really want to do that morphology portion very accurately. And producers need to also be thinking about, okay, a borderline bull that is not passing, he's still going to get some cows pregnant, but he's not going to be efficient in getting cows pregnant.
Yeah.
And if we look at the history there, very few bulls actually are infertile bulls. So most bulls will fail because they're below a threshold, not because they don't have anything.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
So you should get some cows pregnant, and that's sometimes the issue we run into. Well, but he got some cows pregnant. Yeah, but he's not efficient. We were trying to push you to be efficient, to produce as many calves as soon as possible, right? And when I say as soon as possible, get into a whole different conversation, right?
I don't want some cows pregnant. I want all the cows pregnant. Yeah. I like the way you set that out because I'm a seed stock producer. So we do breeding soundings exams and all of that on all of our bulls before we sell them. But I'm an alliteration person. So I like the morphology, motility pieces of it, like the M&M to remember that. I've obviously learned a lot about the motility part, but I had never thought about the morphology. Like if the head is a little misshapen, that could affect the DNA. That's important. And I want to touch on the foot part that you mentioned, because sometimes it seems as though as an industry, we can get hung up on like the numbers, right? Like what's his weaning weight EPD? What's his birth weight? What's his calving ease? Like, does he have good marbling numbers? All that. Does he look good? But like, if that bull can't walk, he's worthless, right? He has got to be able to travel the country. And if you live in somewhere, if you live in Montana, that bull has, or Wyoming, that bull has to travel vastly different country than he does if he is in.
But even here in Tennessee, if you're here or West Tennessee, it's all more plain area.
Yeah.
Then you get to Middle Tennessee, we have some hills. But you get to East Tennessee, then it's mountains again, right? So it's, again, there is a lot of different variation even within states, right? But mm-hmm. if you get here, well, we run a very tight operation, right? We can put 2.5 cow-calf pairs per acre. But then you get like in Montana New Mexico, I had a friend that had over 50 acres per cow-calf pair, right?
Yeah.
So
different.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Very, very different scenarios there. But I agree with you. And it starts with the foundation, right? The base needs to be good and moving up. Exactly.
I'm pretty sure the Angus Association has developed or already did develop a feet and legs EPD. And I know that there are a couple other breed registries. What's the word I'm looking for? Breed associations. I used to work for one and I couldn't remember what to call it. The breed associations that are developing EPDs because it's so important. Like I just to reiterate, if your cattle cannot walk, they're not going to do much else. So.
And phenotypic evaluations too, right? I think we need to pair both of them. I think like you mentioned before, the numbers are extremely important, right? The EPD mm-hmm. is bringing a lot to the table.
Yeah,
especially if we have genomic enhanced EPDs that give us an extra level of confidence of what we're seeing on the genetic potential for that bull to pass to their calves, but also the phenotypic evaluation of those animals, making sure they actually have what their numbers are telling us that they have.
Yeah, like the numbers can say, you've got to have your eyes on the cattle. You can't just go off of a number and trust that. You have to be able to see them and know what you're purchasing or know what kind of, you know, genetics you're putting into your herd. You said something at the beginning that like piqued my interest, and I wrote it down on my little scrap of paper here. But you said something about, I can't remember if you said fertility doesn't change, but I know that there are, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that there are things that can like make a bull fail a breeding soundness exam in like, you know, maybe on February 1st, they fail it. But then with time, they can you can retest them if it's an issue that's not like devastating, and then they can pass that one. So is that something like, am I wrong in thinking that?
No. So there is three classifications for the breeding soundness exam, right? So you have the one that passed, or that what we call satisfactory potential breeder, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a potential breeder. That's some of the key words there, right? At this moment, in this snapshot that we're looking here, he's okay. Then we have the one that got a deferred classification. That means that whatever issues we're detecting right now, it may be able to get over it. So that's when, okay, we're unsure if the issues we're seeing here right now, he'll get over or not. But at this moment, he's not good. So we need to retest that animal. That's what a deferred classification is. Most of the time, that is associated to young bulls, not really older bulls, but younger bulls, we give a lot more deferred versus failed or unsatisfactory, right? So that is what we call it, unsatisfactory potential breeders. Those would be, for example, if they have really, really small scrotal circumference.
Right.
Okay, that bull will not get over it. That's not fixable. That bull has corkscrew feet. He's not going to get over it.
Not going to get over that, yeah.
So things like that, I mean, now that bull is blind. That bull is not going to get over blindness. Now he has pink eye. Okay, that bull is deferred right now, and we need to reassess whether he still has sight or not afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Tired of the 21-day shot show? Stop hitting the cortisol hornet's nest with a wiffle ball bat every time you wean, transport, commingle, do shoot work, or experience Mother Nature's mood swings with weather. The cortisol surge can't be stopped, but it can be proactively controlled. QFA 2000 is a proactive approach to reducing the risk of BRD in calves. QFA 2000 reduces the use of antimicrobials, improves innate immune function, and allows the calf to do what it's meant to do, efficiently gain weight. For less than half the cost of antimicrobials, you can take a proactive, hands-off approach with your calves. Control the 21-day cortisol surge and control your drug costs with QFA 2000. For more information, contact us at applied-biotechnologies.com.
In the, like, frostbite to the scrotum, and that can obviously cause one to fail a breed of soundness exam at that time. But can a bull come back from that? Can the produce motile sperm after that, after a period of time?
Correct. So yes, the answer is depends, but yes, it's possible. So it will depend on the degree of that frostbite and what is and how much he's able to heal from that testicular frostbite. Mm-hmm. So if that frostbite is large enough that cause a big scar issue, well, scar tissue will not allow them to have to change exchange temperature. So the test has to be 2 to 3 degrees Celsius below the body temperature. That's what we want that temperature to be.
Yeah.
So that scar tissue formed because of the frostbite may or may not cause issues with that thermoregulation. Mm-hmm. So if it does, then what we're doing is we are creating an insulation point in there that can make that testis be increased temperature for a prolonged period of time. And that will cause both motility and morphological issues on the sperm.
Okay.
Now, if it is a small thing and he can recover to it, yeah, life goes on a couple of days. It depends when you're testing him, but usually, so that's another thing, right? So from beginning to end of the spermatogenic cycle, so the formation of that sperm cell, it takes about 60 days. So if an insult that happens today, technically it will take 60 days after the end of that issue for that bull to fully recover from it.
Okay.
So frostbite, heat stress, all that will cause issues there. So yeah, I actually, also recently, I can't remember when we put it out, but we wrote an article about frostbite. I wrote it with a friend of mine at North Dakota State, Dr. Lee Squail, and talking a little bit about those things that don't be scared, but be proactive and go check it, right?
Right, yeah.
And we can take precautions to avoid it, right? So padded areas, don't leave bulls on the extreme cold temperatures, on concrete without any padding and things like where that casters would be in contact with.
Yeah, that makes sense,
So things to prevent it, right? But after the fact, just go ahead and test it and make sure.
It's better to know.
And then if you're going to use on that year or that season or next season, I guess that decision would really depend on the value of that animal, the genetic value of that animal. Is it worth waiting? If it's close enough to my breeding season, right? What the management decision, it's very dependable of how close you are to needing to use that animal. And is it worth waiting, or am I better off replacing that bull, culling that bull, and buying another bull?
That's a really good point. I was just looking that up because I was looking at this gestation calendar that's on this website. And so like if they are serviced in May, like if you service your calves at the beginning of May, those calves are due in early February. But like if you live up north, I don't have this problem of frostbite in March. That's not something where in Kansas we have that issue in January and February, not March and April. But if you're 60 days and your bull they have a blizzard or something come through and bad temperatures in Nebraska or Canada or whatever, and you got to wait 60 days, you might be pushing your calving back later than what you want if you have a bull that you got to wait 60 days to retest. So that's an important component that if you don't ever have to deal with frostbite that late in the year, you may not think about the importance of it, but it is important.
Yep. Another thing that I didn't mention before, which is not part of the BSE, right? So the BSE is a snapshot, is the best way we currently have to evaluate bull fertility. We should be doing it all our bulls every year before each breeding season. I say before each breeding season because here in the Southeast it's very common for some of my producers have a spring and a fall herd. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you're using that bull for spring and fall, guess what? You need to test that bull twice, right? I want to make sure that bull is good before each one. And I often get that question, how long is that good for? Well, we say 60 days, but in reality, I joke about that is a tail light insurance. If you don't see the tail light of your veterinarian, that paper is gone. I joke about it, right? Because anything can happen from that point on. You get the bull out of the chute, that bull breaks a leg, he's not going to be breeding any cows with a broken leg. Mm-hmm. That bull jump a fence and lose his testes, hanging there, he's not going to be breeding any cows, right? Or severe sickness. Or, you know, there are several things that can happen that can change the ability of that bull to be fertile.
Yeah.
But with that said, it is the best way we currently have to evaluate a fertility potential.
Yeah.
What is not included on a BSC that I highly encourage people to do is check for libido of those bulls.
Okay.
So the desire for breeding cows. And on a presentation, and me and my advisors, both my master's and PhD, we use that picture all the time, all around. It's from Dr. Barr from Canada. And he has these two Charolais bulls. Both just passed the breeding sounds exam, and they keep this bull around because of that. That bull has zero libido. So they both pass the breeding sounds exam. They put it with the cow, and that bull go and lay down in front of the cow while the other bull go in and breed the cow.
Yeah.
So, he needs to pass, but also needs to go breed cows, otherwise they're not going to get any calves. So when you turn all your bulls out, the best way is watch that bull. Go there. Not necessarily every day, but a few days, go check and make sure that bull is interested in going there and doing its job, going there checking cows.
Yeah.
That's make sure you see him breeding the cows.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. We had an issue this year where we had a bull that passed his BSE, but I don't think he didn't have libido, and we didn't realize it till a little too late. And so we have a lot of open heifers this year. So we have learned our lesson, I guess. So I just want to remind our audience that if you're enjoying this episode of the Beef Podcast presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like and subscribe and share it with your friends and family. Dr. Zacka, what does the future of bull fertility evaluation look like? What do you think see coming down the path?
Absolutely. So in my lab, that's kind of what I focus on, my research on my lab, my groups, my group of students that I've been advising and even during my graduate work. So we've been looking at on the molecular level. My goal is to find ways that we can add on this fertility test that we're doing on that BSC. It may not the utmost objective, right, would be like, hey, this bull is highly fertile, this bull is medium fertility, this bull is low fertility. But that will be, it's really long term, right? And may not be even achievable. But in reality, what we're trying to do is looking at more on the molecular side of things, finding molecules that may be associated to fertility, either high or low fertility, right? So there's two benefits there and different benefits. The goal is, hey, well, I want to find which ones are the highly fertile bull. But if I can actually remove the bottom of that population, I can shift my average up, right? So as of right now, some of the markers we've been finding is more associated to low fertility. So if they have more abundance of this molecules, they've been they're lower fertility animals. So you're kind of working on towards getting a little bit better. None of those are available yet. It's still on the lab side and validating. But one thing that we need to understand, especially on the seed stock side, as we get better at detecting these bulls, we're going to be culling a lot more bulls.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's the objective is to find the top. So meaning we're going to be removing more bulls from the potential sire. On the short term, you're going to be selling less bulls. On the long term, hopefully by selecting for this, we get back to having that number of bulls we are used to sell, because now we're selecting for more fertile animals available. So things like proteins, metabolites, even on the microRNAs, which are small molecules that can actually control the function of proteins and how proteins are transcribed, very, very broad for explanation of microRNAs there. But also, I can't guarantee that those are the things that have been changing. But I work with Dr. Fontes from the University of Georgia, and he's been focusing on a little bit on the overnutrition side or excess of fat deposition on bulls. And what we are seeing on those studies is those bulls that have too much fat, some of them even have good quality semen, but the ability to generate embryos is reduced. So they fertilize, but the embryos don't develop. They stop developing. So we're seeing a little bit of those variations in there. So there's more to than the simple motility and morphology, right? So they are passing that minimum quality for it. But once we get to the lab and start looking, we haven't looked into pregnancy rates yet, just because we really need large number of animals. Our females should be bred to investigate that. But it's even now looking at this, some studies, it depends on how long is that insult, so the excess fat has been developed. We start seeing some really big issues on semen quality. But even short term, and he did one study with mature bulls, even on a short term that we see minor changes on semen quality, we saw a great decrease on the formation of embryos or development of embryos from those bulls that have excess fat. So there's a lot of that within ejaculate that is on the management side of those bulls. So maintaining bulls on good condition, not over condition. I'm not talking about keeping bulls thin.
Right,
I'm talking about keeping them on a good condition, that 5 to 6 body condition score.
Yeah.
Compared to that 6.5, 7, 7.5. Yeah. Right. Probably the 6.5, it's kind of in the middle there. But I mean, once you get 7 and above, probably is where we start seeing issues in there. And maybe that bull may pass a breeding sounds exam, but it's not going to generate as many pregnancy as you're expecting him to generate.
Yeah. We all know what those 7 bulls look like. They've been bellied up to the bunk.
It's been something on the educational side, very tricky for us, because, and you have studies that show it, right? We go to this, just get data from bull sales, especially university bull sales, that we have most of our data, access to information. And we see, yes, bulls that are heavier and higher body condition, they look beautiful, right? And they sell higher.
Yeah.
But we do know that there is a fertility issue there. And, you know, I don't believe it is a lifelong impact. I think we can go back and manage those bulls to a good body condition and they'll be okay. I'm not 100% sure, but that's what I believe. That's our hypothesis, is just a short-term impact on there. But several people go to those, buy those big fat bulls and turn them out with cows without any stepping down adaptation, right? So that can have huge, huge impact on their pregnancy rates and the overall herd fertility.
I'm writing down all these numbers about the BCS things. But yeah, you can't just take a fat bull, an overconditioned bull, and then stick him out with a bunch of cows, you know, on grass. Like, that's going to be a pretty big shock to his system. He may not be able to travel well and go straight to work. Like, that's just not setting him up for success or setting your ranch up for success. So
it's time for our famous 3.
Dietforge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists.
Stop hiring for problems automation can solve. Start with Elevate Agents.
Revenue grew, so did your hours. The owner's box, buy back 20 a week. Don't hire another VA stuck in 2015. Hire a remote AI specialist from Latin who runs AI tools, works in your time zone, and helps your team move faster. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io. Zentrix OS, the business operating system built for teams who are serious about goals, tasks, and measurable results. One platform to run your entire operation. Zentrix Insights. The right person in the right seat starts with knowing how your team is actually wired. Visit ZentrixInsights.com. Every person on your team is wired differently. Some thrive with structure. Others drive results through autonomy. Some process information fast and move on. Others need depth before they decide. And when the wrong person is in the wrong seat, not because of skill, but because of how someone is built, performance suffers and no one knows why. Zentrix Insights maps exactly that. Behavioral patterns, cognitive style, and natural work preferences are all visible in 15 minutes. So you stop guessing who should own what and start putting the right people in the right seats. Because the best teams are not just talented, they are well-placed. Visit ZentrixInsights.com.
We could keep talking about this for a really, really, really long time, but I do want to make sure we have time to get to our kind of fun closing questions. And so I've given Dr. Zaka the heads up on these, so he's not having them sprung on him last minute. But what, Dr. Zaka, what is your favorite beef or cattle-related resource?
So I'm a reproductive physiologist, so I'm going to brag a little bit on my side. So I'm actually, as of last year, part of the Beef Reproduction Task Force. So if you're familiar with astral synchronization and protocols, one of the biggest thing that people know about this group is you go to the Sire Summary, any of the AI companies, And you see those protocols on the last few pages. That's where they come from the Beef Reproduction Task Force. So our website, thebeefrepro.org, it's definitely my go-to, and I tell everybody go there. If you want to know more about reproduction, that is a really easy place to go. There is, we have recordings of the previous annual meetings that we have. There is proceedings available there. We do a spring seminar webinar there, about 4 or 5 meetings or webinars every year. So there's a lot of really good information there beyond the astrosynchronization protocols. Some management tools available too. So that is my go-to, and I tell people there.
Cool. Beefrepro.org. That's very easy to remember as well. So what is your transitioning a bit or pivoting? What is your favorite non-beef or cattle-related book or one that you are currently reading?
Absolutely. So we were talking a little bit about this before, right, Brandy? And it, with 2 young kids, most of my reading has been a child's book. But recently, and actually I knew about this book for a long time, but I didn't have it. And I haven't started reading it yet, but I just got it. It's called The Fusion for Innovation, or is it The Fusion of Innovation? And actually this book talks about how people adopt technology, or one of the biggest take home is how, and there's a different kind of people within adoption. And that really helps me on my extension and in understanding. That's why I'm really excited about reading this book, is going to understanding more on the people side, that it's a research based, but it's not related directly to cattle.
Yeah, but still important. Like, there's so many things outside of agriculture that are applicable to agriculture, just because it's not, and you know, it doesn't have ag written on it or cattle or something. So, well, I know that you are busy with children and things like that, but I can, you'll have time, you know, when you're up in the middle of the night holding a baby, you will have time to, maybe you have time to read while you rock. So, and then the last kind of fun, relatable question we have is, when you think of someone you admire or look up to, what is a characteristic they possess that has led them to be successful? You don't have to necessarily share the person with us. We're more looking for like the characteristic.
It's very hard for me to talk about anybody that has influenced me more than Dr. Vasconcelos and Dr. Zequinha from Brazil. I mean, he's a person that I look up to. All my mentors actually are really important for me. But in reality, the only reason I know my mentors and I've had those mentors is because of him. So he put me in contact with my master advisor. He put me in contact with my PhD advisor even before I knew I was going to do a PhD with him. So he's a person that his mentor, he puts you in contact, and he reads you and understands you better than you do yourself at times. So I don't know how he does it, but I want to be, if I can be a 50% of what he was for me, for my students, I think I'm doing really good. And he's a person's person, I guess. That's the way to say it. He really treats you, and he figures out ways to help you go where you want to go. And he really he sets that foundation for you. I think that's a characteristic that I really like about him. And he's not trying to push him in you. He's trying to get you to show your best. And I've seen so many folks coming out of his lab or his group, working group, and doing great because of him. So that's something I really, really like, and that pushing people to be their best self. I think he is very inspirational for me. You know, I wish I can be a little bit like him.
That's wonderful. That's a great, I love hearing your answer. Thank you for sharing that with us. I hope we can all find a mentor like that in our lives, for sure. Well, Dr. Zaka, that is all the questions and time we have for today. I have really enjoyed talking with you. I feel like we could talk about cows for a lot longer than we did. So you may have to come back on the show, but you've given me a lot to think about. If listeners have questions for you or want to learn more about our discussion today, where can they do that?
Well, on the beefrepro.org, you can find my information. You can go to the University of Tennessee Animal Science website. You can find me there. you can go to the utbeef.com, which is our the Beef University of Tennessee Beef and Forage Center website. We have articles there. Not only me, all the extension specialists will put articles there. You can find my contact information there. My email, szoka@utk.edu. Please feel free to contact me. And I mean, if you contact me, when I reply you, you're going to have my ops number, my cell phone number, anything. I'm really here to help. So anybody that needs anything, mostly cattle related and reproductive physiology, that's what I do. And being an extension specialist, really, it's my job is to help our beef producers, local and national and international, whoever needs help. That's what I'm here for.
Well, that's wonderful. We appreciate you. I have put your email and beefrepro.org in the footnotes of the episode. So if any of our listeners would like to access those, you can definitely do that wherever you are listening to the podcast or viewing it. Thank you again, Dr. Szoka, for joining us here today. And thank you to our guests for being here, or thank you to our audience for being here and for tuning in. And we will meet you back here next week on the Beef Podcast presented by Wisenetics.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.